home in Acworth, Georgia, and the date is October 22nd, 2009. And first we wanted to talk about the Bethel AME Church. And how long have you been going to Bethel?
I've been going to Bethel since I was probably 22 years old. I think I joined in 1966. I first joined Zion Hill, because at the time there was only the two black churches. And at that time we were having services on alternate Sundays. So we really didn't have a Methodist or a Baptist. We just had worship service. And on the first and the third, we went to Bethel. And on the second and the fourth, we went to Zion Hill. And it was the same people going to both churches.
Was it the same minister or a different minister?
Had different ministers. We had a Baptist minister and a Methodist minister.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they could only afford to have them there twice a month?
Well, that was the way it started. And like I said, it started out just really being a worship type thing. And at the time, Acworth was such a small community. And with a small group of black people, that we just worshiped together. And doing it that way, then each church got the benefit of everybody. Mm-hmm. I think that was the thing. But then as the years went on, I think maybe, 15 years ago, some of the pastors started figuring they can do them one Sunday, and I get the benefit of everybody, whoever wanted to go to whatever church. And so then that stopped it. And I think it stopped a lot of the fellowship that was in the community, too.
Back then, when you contributed to the church, how did you know which one it was going to? Like if you passed around the bowl?
They had the officers for the Baptists and officers for the Methodists. It was just the same people going. And you paid your tithes at whichever church, Mm-hmm. But you gave it either church, wherever you were at that particular Sunday. That's mm-hmm. what you did. And they had their own, they kept their own books and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it was just the fact that it was just not a Baptist or a Methodist type thing. We just considered, it was just like one big family that we just worshiped together, just church,
So the AME minister comes from Atlanta, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, the one we have now is from Marietta. Okay. We have a lady pastor now.
Oh, really?
And see, that's the thing with AME. The conference send us our pastors. Mm-hmm. The Baptists can hire who they want to be there. We don't really have that choice. Mm-hmm. They are sent to us on a yearly basis. The last pastor we had, Reverend Walters, was here like 7 years. So it's just according to when they want to move them or whatever.
Well, do you know much about when the church was established?
Between 1860 and 1870. Because when we first started, Zion Hill and Bethel, when Sherman first came through, we worshipped in the same building. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I have some history in here if you want to take you one of our books. And I'm going to give you one before you leave when we did our anniversary this past.
Oh, yeah.
You can have them. I saved one for you.
Thank you.
And it talks a little bit about how the AME Church got established and when it was first put here, when the towers were put on and stuff. So it'll give you a little bit of that
information. The money to build the church in the 1865 to 1870 came mostly from up north, not from Acworth. Is that right?
I think what happened when they established, I think the people here in the city, I think they did a lot of it because of especially the work itself. And at that particular time, a lot of the money. But I think a lot of it had to do with the citizens here. And And I think a lot of when they came from the north and to help establish the different churches. As a matter of fact, I read up on the guy that you gave me the website for, and that was really interesting.
It was.
I say that, so I want to do some of that on our Black History program.
I wish we could find some more information on all of the ministers for that church.
That was just so cool. But I think, and if you when you were up there, and if you noticed our ceiling, mostly slaves built that. So it was just, I think, between the donations and what it took to erect it. But I know when we were researching it and trying to doing our Black History program, and they were talking about how they actually built it without any. And it's mind-boggling to me that, because they said they had to do it like upside down on these scaffolding things that they were hanging on without any blueprints, because most of them probably couldn't read anyway. To put that kind of design on a structure that high and that big, that's just something. So we just always feel like it was just God-oriented, and, you know, and he's left it there for so many years. And I think that's why we fight so hard to keep it and keep it up. But and God's blessed us to be able to do it. We've kept the doors open. So, you know, he's just been blessed. Because most of the older people that really cared about it and really cared about church and what church meant, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So it's left up to the younger people to try to leave something for our kids. And try to keep that legacy going, that they don't lose interest and they don't lose what it was first put there for, you know. So it's a kind of great responsibility. And when
if they could do some cosmetic work on the outside, you could bring more people in. More people may be interested to go to that church.
You know. I don't know, and like I said, we're working on it, but like I said, funds are limited because we have, like I said, conferences that we're obligated to pay every year, and with the limited funds that we have and the limited amount of people that we have, and it's not a cheap thing to do. It's very costly. Mm-hmm. And unless we can get somebody to just come and take an interest and want to help, it'll be a long process. The registry and everything, grants and things that's out there, and you have to get people interested enough to do it. I don't know. I just don't think people really realize what they have, or they don't want to take the time to really do it, or they just don't really understand what's involved in the whole maintenance part of it. And a lot of people have a lot to say about where the money goes, and they don't understand the AME, you know, system. Mm-hmm. That's my sign. And so we are just... But right now, one of the main things, because see, the younger people wanted to keep it the color that it was. Mm-hmm. It was some of the older people that wanted to paint it. Because see, it was red brick. We did not want to change it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be so costly to even try to get that paint off of there. We would have rather for hit the stand to have stood the way it was. Mm-hmm. We tried to keep the inside pretty much. My son was one of the ones that redid the altar. Mm-hmm. Because they had painted the altar, it had all this paint on it. And I said, how in the world, why would you want to just cover up something that beautiful? And just our podium, he just extended the big part where they'd have a place to put their Bibles and things. But the podium itself comes from the 1800s. So we have the
banister altar. Is too, the all of around
that.
The altar?
Yeah. And what we did, we took... It took us almost a month to get all that paint off of there. We had it. So he went over it and shellacked it and stained it. And that's why we have the pretty wood part on there.
I've done that before. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And so it's just it's time consuming. And by the time you do so many little things, then you got to start all over again. And right now we would love to work on doing a fellowship hall where we would have more room, when we have different things that are more seating room to put people. Mm-hmm. But right now our windows is our main priority. We've got to get some windows in there. Mm-hmm. We've got some, they're trying now to get the panes in that very top, the tower part up there, because mm-hmm. pigeons and everything are getting in there.
And rain too, probably.
Yes, and so it's so much. It's really so much to be done. Mm-hmm. But we want to keep it the way it is and just try to keep it up and try to, you know, keep it from running down.
Well, you said you went there with your mom. She changed over too when you did?
My mom's always been.
Oh, she always went to Bethel.
Because, mm-hmm. like I said, it was not really, it just really wasn't Baptist or Methodist. It was, then they just had church, you know.
When did that start? Do you know what year that started doing that? Because it wasn't always that way.
Where
everybody went to both churches?
Oh, no, it started that way.
It
went from there to the every Sunday thing in both churches. But it started that.
So even in the 1860s and 70s, that was that way?
We were having, yeah, church together that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, I know that this the other church wasn't built until the 1905, is it? Early 1900s.
Seeing to me like Zion Hill is older than that.
Trying to remember. It has a sign out, and I can't remember what the date is on it.
Yeah, but like I said, we went, and see, even back when before they did the integration, mm-hmm. we had classes in the churches. Mm-hmm. And before the black people were allowed to go to the elementary school. As a matter of fact, my son, his age group, were the first that was admitted into the public schools here.
Oh, really? When was that?
Little, how old are you, son? Back in 65? 66? He's, Leroy was born in 64. So back around about 1970, mm-hmm. I guess, when they first started, integrating. Because when I left Roberts, they bused us to Lemon Street in Marietta. So I went to high school in Lemon Street.
Okay.
In Marietta, we didn't have a high school here that we could go to.
Right.
And after that, but when they started, as a matter of fact, we started in kindergarten, I just took him and left him. I said, you stay here, the mom come and get you. Okay. So, they've been going ever since, but we won't go into that. But and like I said, this town, as far as is the town and it converting from segregate, it was a very simple thing for us, because black and whites played together the whole time. It was just places that we could not go, but it really didn't mean that much. So,
what places couldn't you go?
Well, it was like, it was, well, say the movie theaters. You had to sit in the balcony. The pharmacy, the drugstore, you could go in, but you couldn't sit, at the counter, this kind of thing.
When you went to the department store, did you have to wait for, if there was a white person in there, you had to wait for them all to be waited on before you get waited on?
Trying to think.
No.
And then, like, I had several white friends that I played with. Lemon Autry, he was a lawyer here, and his daughter and I, we played together, the Hemrys. So it was just a matter of the same people that you were playing with and that you were friends with, you were just able to go together in the same places when it all started. So the transition was, we didn't have all this other stuff that a lot of the places were going through, where it, the fighting and the stuff. We never did have to go through that.
But you never had a sit-in or anything at the drugstore?
Nah. Because when I got out of high school, I went to school on Auburn Avenue. I went to Apex Beauty College there, and it was in the same building that at the end of Auburn Avenue that Martin Luther King's office was in. And I think at the time it was a WAOK radio station or whatever. So I saw a lot of the marches, and you know, I was there with a lot of, and I'd get on the bus here and see. And when I was a little kid coming up, the train, I could catch the train right here in town. So it was just...
Too bad it's still not still that way,
you know,
huh?
I miss it. I really miss it. I tell people that we used to could just walk out of your house and you wouldn't even have to lock your door. Mm-hmm. Your children could play in the yard and you didn't have to be afraid that somebody may come by and snatch them. And I hate that my children, my grandchildren, can't, you know, I guess be in that same atmosphere and know that same peace and safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now when my grandkids come, I stay out there with them. You know, if they want to get on the trampoline, I'm watching them constantly. And it's just, but then you could, well, Mom had her cafe was out here, and she'd put me, I would go to visit my aunt in Chattanooga, and I think it was number three going out and number four coming in, or however it was, vice versa. But it was just a happy time. There was just, I had a really good childhood.
You didn't notice when you went to the bigger towns like Chattanooga or Atlanta that did you feel like you were treated differently than you were in Acworth?
Not really, because I don't think it really meant, because like I said, I lived here, and this is where I visited. I had an uncle in New York. I had an uncle in, because I was an only child, but I had an uncle in Florida. I had an aunt in Detroit. And that was where I spent most of my summers, you know, at one or the other. And so up there, it didn't, you know, so.
At that time in New York and so forth, were they still segregated up there?
I think to a certain extent at certain places, but as a child, I can't remember ever having any kind of confrontation or ever having to be aware of anything.
They have separate facilities like kid. Atlanta? Like separate restrooms or separate water fountains or anything like that?
I'm trying to think. And they probably did, but I wasn't exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably did in certain places. They probably did, you know. They probably did. Really, can you get that, please? But I said, as a child coming up, I wasn't really exposed to any of that.
You said your mom had a cafe.
Mm-hmm. Almost right in here. Right on that side of my house and right in here, she had Harden's Cafe. But Mama started, and I guess you could say it started back in the 30s, mm-hmm. in the kind of middle 30s, because at the time, City of Acworth gave Mama permission to serve wrap sandwiches out of her kitchen out there because she had to take care of Granddaddy. Mm-hmm. Granddaddy had had a stroke, and she brought him to stay with her. And that's how, because my mom cooked up here when the hotel was up here where mm-hmm. Lacey Drugs is, right up in that area now. And Mom used to tell me that she bought that house out there working for $7 a week and paid for her house. And so it went from her selling in the kitchen and right out here where my house is. I don't know if you know anything about Bethany Bridge?
No.
It's a bridge that connects Cobb County and Bartow, I believe, somewhere going out, Glade Road, going back out that way, going toward Cartersville. Mm-hmm. But it's a big steel bridge. It's a big old steel bridge out there. And the workers, they had tents out here at that particular time. And the workers on there, Mom would fix their meals and things, and they'd fix their lunches. And they stayed here while they built that bridge out there. So it's a lot of history right around in here.
So it was mostly black folks that built the bridge? Or it was white folks, too, that would come to
it? I can't even remember if it was a mix. I don't even remember. I was just a little girl. And then when they built the Black Beach,
mm-hmm.
which George was at the time was called George Washington Carver,
mm-hmm. And Houston told me about that one.
Uh-huh. Well, my mom, when they built it, my mom ran it for about 6 years.
Oh, really? She's the one that ran the kitchen and stuff.
She ran the concession stand out there for about 6 years and ran this. And so, like I said, I had a very little happy.
What was your mom's name?
Lenora Harden.
So that's your maiden name is Harden?
Harden, H-A-R-D-E-N. That's my mom. That's my granddaddy. He was a tailor here.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. He worked up there in a little shop somewhere up there at top of Cherokee Street over there in those brick buildings right there. He had a little shop in there somewhere.
Was it his own shop or he worked for someone else?
It was his own shop.
And his name was Harden also?
His name was Floyd. My mom was Floyd. She, her maiden name was Floyd. And that's my grandmama. And see, I don't remember any of my I remember my granddaddy. My granddaddy died when I was 5 years old, so I wasn't raised with any. And my daddy's people was all from New York, so I met his sister. But I didn't know anything that much about, and that's my great-grandmom over there. And
goodness. It's good that you have pictures. A lot of people, they don't have the pictures of their ancestors, or their grandparents.
So, that's me right there when I was about five.
So that's when you would have started school, huh?
Yeah.
Where did you start school at? The Roberts School?
At the
Rosenwald School?
The one, the community center over here. That's where Roberts is now. That's where I started school.
What was it like inside when you went there? Did they have desks?
Pretty much like it is now. I mean, it was just like a big room, and they had these partition things for different rooms. Mm-hmm. The stoves in there, the...
Everybody have a desk, or they have tables and
benches?
They had little desks.
The seats with the little desks made on them. Mm-hmm. And somebody around here, I think, still has one of those. And then we could come home for lunch. We could walk to the house. So I would walk and come home.
Well, that's nice.
At lunchtime, you know. And Mom had one of the first televisions around here. And she had it in the cafe. And I could come home and watch TV. And eat my lunch and go back to school. So I had, the things that I can remember from my childhood was very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. I had a very good childhood. But I remember, like I said, my granddad, and I remember him being paralyzed. Mm-hmm. When my mom, her sister in Detroit, we brought her home. We kept her for 18 years. She had had a stroke there, and they found her in the snow there in Detroit. She worked at a hotel there. And she was paralyzed, so when my daughter was 1 month old, we went and got Aunt Bessie, brought her here, and she died when she was 18 years old. So that's my middle daughter and her husband. Mickey, that's my baby girl and her husband. That's my son, he's the oldest. And then I have 9 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren.
Wow. That's nice.
So I've been truly blessed. I really have. God's really blessed me. We've had.
Now your mama did all that stuff by herself. How old was she when your father passed?
Wow, I don't know.
Young?
Dad, let me see. Daddy died because Mama was in her 30s when I was born. Mm-hmm. Daddy died in 86, I believe. My daddy died in 86. He had Alzheimer's. Mm. He had retired from Lockheed, and he loved to cook. Cause he, when he first came from New York, he worked around the bus stations and stuff, and he cooked in there. And he went into the service. And cause I was born in 44, so when he got out of the service, they. Like I said, they had the cafes together. So back in the 50s.
So they had the cafe together, or he worked at Lockheed while she was.
Well, he worked at Lockheed, but they had, Daddy worked, what did they call that place before Lockheed?
Bell Bomber.
Mm-hmm. So, so all of that.
That's where Mr. Johnson worked.
Uh-huh. And then, so it was, but Mom, like I said, Mom had a cafe, and like I said, she worked at the beach. She opened that up for them, and she closed hers down after a while. And
She took care of her father and ran the cafe at the same
well,
time?
Granddad, like I said, granddaddy died when I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. So when she opened the cafe, granddad had already passed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had already passed. But we had, like I said, Aunt Bessie came. We got Aunt Bessie back in, I think, in 65. And she died right before Daddy died, I think. So we've had a kind of time. And then my husband, we were married. We got married in 63. And he died in 98. And we married 35 years. But he got a woman to go to work, and he had two brain aneurysms. So he stayed in a coma. They really didn't think Roy would ever come out of the coma, but he stayed in a coma from July to the 1st of October, I believe. So he had an irreversible trach, stomach tube, and he was paralyzed on his left side. And they put him in Shoreham for some rehab once he finally came to, because I would never let him cut anything off. So they put him in Shoreham, and they told me that would be where he, because he wouldn't ever, you know, live or get up, because he couldn't speak. But I says, well, he won't stay here. So they said, but you can't take care of him. And I says, you don't know me that well. So they taught me how to change his trach out, how to feed him and everything. So I brought Roy home, and he lived for 2 years after that before he died.
Well, you got training from your mama taking care of people.
Well, it was that, it's just, you do what you have to do. You know, you can give it up as your last resort. So my son, almost lost him in a fire when he was 9 years old.
Fire here at the house?
Yeah, he's here. Mm. Not at the house. Out in the yard, a gas can exploded. He had a go-kart. And it exploded on him. He was burning 45% of his body.
Let me talk about Rosenwald School a little bit more. Have you ever heard anybody say anything about who contributed the land for the Rosenwald School? Not in the 50s, the original one?
Mm-mm. I really don't.
Because I just realized when I was looking some names up in the census, the person that contributed that land where they moved it to was a white guy.
It probably was.
So I'm wondering, was a lot of this land in this area owned by whites, and did they just rented it out?
I don't really know who first owned this, because I know my mom bought this land. Because hers ran from Cherokee Street to where the end of my house is. And then Roy and I bought this yard outside of me out here.
That's a pretty good piece of land. What is that? 4 acres? 5 acres? No, not that much? 2?
No, it's not nearly that much. But the yard, you know where I told you the trees are right in there? Mm-hmm. That, well, it used to be a house sitting out there. So it, but when the house burnt down, they said it wasn't really, at the time, wasn't big enough to really put another house on it. Now they build where they want to.
Yeah.
But Roy and I bought it because we just wanted, with the kids and everything, and really didn't want anybody that close to us. So we bought that. So when we got married, Mama deeded this part to us as a wedding present. So, mm-hmm. And I've been here, I went from Mama's house to this house. So I've been here about 46 years.
Pretty much on the same corner.
On the same corner. So his home.
Yeah. Did when you went to the Rosenwald School, you had to buy your own books, right?
I don't even remember. I mean, that's been so long ago, because I went until I think I was, let's see, when did I start to Roberts? So I only went there maybe, because when I graduated from over there, it was like the 8th grade then.
Mm-hmm. And the Roberts School?
Roberts School. Mm-hmm. And then we went to Lemon Street. So, and I'm thinking we did have to purchase our own books.
Did you have to do that when you went to the Roberts School, or they provided the books and stuff for you?
No.
Do you remember them building
like
the Roberts
School?
Seemed
to me like they provided us with books then.
Do you remember when when they opened it?
Uh-huh. I can remember. I can pretty much remember when they opened it. I remember when they brought the community center down here. I remember that. Like I said, I was a really young kid then.
Mm.
And a lot of that just really didn't mean what it means now. You know, it just didn't. You didn't think that much about it. But I have some books here that a black friend of mine, Shelton, wrote a book and got some of the census and some of the things.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ackworth has published one.
Yeah, I've got that one.
I can remember some of the people that's in there that's gone, but it's not really the younger. I remember the prom that we had. We had it over here in the community center,
mm-hmm.
at the time when we graduated from Roberts over there. And like I said, it was just, and then like I said, went to Lemon Street, and that was really a transition. I mean, that was really, because it was like you just kind of sheltered, mm-hmm. right in here, and then to go somewhere else and have to blend in with that. So it was kind of a transition, but it was okay. It was good.
Well, you went from a place that you know everybody,
yeah.
to a place that you don't know everybody. That's a culture shock.
Yeah. So, but it was okay. Like I said, I had a real good childhood.
Do you remember? Someone said something about having plays at the Rosenwald School. Do you remember anything about that?
I had a teacher. Her name was Miss Neely.
N-E-E-L-E-Y?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it was N-E-A-L-E.
N-E-A-L-E-Y.
Uh-huh. And we did a lot of plays. She was very good. She would make our costumes, and we would put on plays over there. Yeah, she was real good.
Did the whole community go to watch the plays?
Mm-hmm.
Or just your parents would show up?
Well, I guess you could say pretty much, you know, the parents and the people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
The white people didn't, I don't think they, you know, they ever came anything like
yeah.
that. I can't remember any of them.
Yeah.
But I said most of
the... But the black community, that was kind of their entertainment?
Oh, yeah, it was. And most of all of us, you know, were going, so. But they turned out more then than they do really do now for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But we would put on... different plays, Christmas plays and Easter plays and stuff like that, and yeah, we had a good time.
Did she write the plays, or was it like a real play, like she got the...
She would, I think a lot of them that she would come up, because we did different things. We would have musicals, we would have dancing, you know, and stuff like that.
But you weren't doing like Romeo and Juliet
No, we didn't do any of that.
Do you remember what any of the plays were about?
God, no. Jesus. I can't even remember. I guess if I thought about it enough, I could.
Did you know anything about her training as far as her schooling or anything like that?
Mm-mm, but I know all of them were qualified teachers. Now, I know that for a fact. And when they left here... a lot of them went to Marietta. They taught at Marietta High. They taught at different schools there. Some went to Lemon Street. And I think one or two of them went to Sprayberry. I think so. They were qualified teachers. And to be honest with you, I think at that particular time and that particular season, we learned more than most kids learn today because they were stricter.
Mm-hmm.
There was discipline, there was respect, which we don't have a whole lot of it now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were older teachers, so, and when I was coming, you were taught you had to respect them. So hit, as far as, and they didn't mind, and you did something in school, and your parents told you up, so it didn't, you know, it's not like, It's not like it is now. So I think the culture part of it, the reason why that a lot of the black kids came out of it as well as they did, because of the discipline of our parents and our teachers that we had then. So it was, and then when you went to school, you went to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just to get from point A to point B. You went to learn, and I don't think they cared whether you stayed in there 5 or 6 years. You either had to learn it or you stayed there, you know. So it wasn't like I promote you because you're old enough and, you know, promote you to another grade. That didn't happen that way. So when you got out of there, you learned whatever it was they were teaching. So it was, I think, all in all, it was just the atmosphere, the respect, the whole thing. It was just a different atmosphere than it is now with kids going to school.
Do you feel like parents put more of an emphasis on learning and education back then than they mm-hmm. do now?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think
it was so much as more of an emphasis on it. It was just that at that particular time, they were interested in their children learning something so they could get from where they were. And now his, you know, go to college, you know, to be a doctor, to do this and that. But they just wanted them to learn something, to get further than they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was more focused on that than so much as really the ones that were able and they could, I guess they thought about furthering, you know, college and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were just really grateful that they could do more and learn more, than they didn't have to go to the fields and everything, you know. So I think it was just a matter of them being able to be educated then. So,
do you think that parents put more of an emphasis on girls getting educated than boys because it was easier for girls to advance, like into teaching and nursing, where boys had more of a problem getting into professional jobs?
Because I had no brothers or sisters, so I really can't.
Were you an only child? Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Yep, only child. But I don't, and like I said, I think it had to do with the family itself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think there was a ratio there. I just think it was the family themselves, whether they, like I said, were able or were just bent on them going, you know,
mm-hmm.
to becoming. I think it was just the fact that they were just so glad that their children was able to be educated and be able to go to school and learn what they could,
mm-hmm.
and come from where they came from, you know. So I think it was just it. I don't really think it was so much as a future type thing as to get them from adolescence to adult and be taken care of that way, you know. I don't really think, and like I said, I think a lot of them, my kids, and I thought more about them being professional, doing something with their lives. Back then, you went a certain way, and then they figured you'd get married and have a family and stuff like that. And the ones that did go to be professionals or something, you know, was kind of red at that time. But
it seems like a lot of the women in the community did like domestic work, laundry, a maid for someone or a cook for someone.
Yeah.
So your mom was kind of a rare bird, that she was her own businesswoman.
And she did, and like I said, she worked, she worked up here at the hotel, and she did, and I know she did some domestic work for, like I said, the lawyer up in town. But from her, from the time that she, like, I guess, was an adult, and when she got married, because Mama was married. She was married twice, and both of her husband, their last name was Harden. Her first husband, I think Mama said he lived, I think they were married like 11 months, and he worked up here at the ice house when they used to have the ice house up here,
mm-hmm.
and he would carry the ice, and the ice he would, when, you know, he had those picks and they would hold the ice that hit, rubbed, kept his leg wet and cold, mm-hmm. and he got pneumonia in his bones some kind of way, and he died. And they were married 11 months. And she married my dad in the early 30s, some kind of, somewhere up in there.
But they weren't related, the two men?
Uh-uh. No.
And you said your father was from New York?
Uh-huh.
Why did he move down to...
I don't know, because I think I don't have a clue, but I think it had something to do with the service. I think it had something to do with the service, and Daddy, I think, worked, like I said, he worked, and like my uncles, they worked on a train. My uncle was a chef cook on the Silver Comet train that ran from Florida to New York, The uncle in New York, they had a business up there. It was like a thing. What did they call it? It was something like a tea house, some type of little business there. Somewhere around New Jersey, up in there, and they were all. Some parts of cooking or being chefs or something like that. And my aunt, she cooked at a hotel there in Detroit. My dad, I think he started out cooking for the bus station or something around here when he first came this way. Mm-hmm. So it was, cooking was just in, and my uncle's sons actually is retired from the Amtrak.
Mm-hmm.
So they went right into and working on the trains too. So hit down. So hit was just, and I love to cook. So I think cooking was just, I don't know, it was just kind of in this family.
Are you a good cook?
I don't cook as much as I used to, but I can get by. I can get by pretty good.
I have to get some recipes from you. I'm sure you got some good ones. Okay, so my final question is there anything that you want to put down for history to know about Ackworth?
Not really. Like I said, Ackworth has always been a very friendly town. I can't remember at any time there was any, and I'm sure it had to be. I'm sure it was. But I can't remember any time that we've had, and we've had like the KKK march up, you know, uptown and all this.
In Ackworth?
Yes.
Oh, because people kept telling me they've never seen the KKK.
Oh, right. Right.
Okay. Oh, now we got to talk then, because they've been telling me they've never seen the Ku Klux Klan.
These people have even been out here in North Cobb and stuff. So,
but you don't think there's local people?
I mean, I don't really know who they were. But like I said, we've never been, you know, had any type of
no
confrontation with them. No, uh-uh. I even heard my mom talk about them sometime, and how her granddaddy would say that there were people at certain times that would come through, they would get missed and they couldn't find them and this kind of thing, you know. But my experience, I've never had any experience, you know, with them as far as coming up as a child. I've never seen anything. I've never known my parents to ever have any confrontation, you know, out of them. So we've always, Ackworth has kind of taken care of its own. They've kind of looked out for each other, like the mayor. I knew Tommy long before he became mayor, and it's just been like a close knit. We're having more because it's expanded more now. More people have moved in, and it's becoming more of a, you know, a melting pot now. But it was mostly, you know, we just kind of took. I remember the house, the greenhouse right up here.
Mm-hmm.
We used to walk. Go across the fence and go up on the house, and he sold like bread and little stuff like that up under there. And we would walk to town at Mr. Hames' store and get grocery and stuff. So I've never had, my kids have always been, they've always had white friends, and it's been, white people have always been in my house in and out. So there's never been a time that I've ever felt uncomfortable here or did not feel like I had friends here, you know. And I've always been very active here in Atwood, so there's really nothing. Out of every place I've been, I don't think I'd ever want to live anywhere else but here. Mm-hmm. I've been to places, and but this has always been home, and I think it always will be. And I don't really see being anywhere else. I love to go, I love to visit, I love to go, but I like coming back home too. So, and my kids have had a good life here. They grew up here, they had a good life here, and they moved there because they're right in the Marietta area right now. All of them are close to me. I can get to them in 20, 30 minutes, so it's, you know, not a big deal. And but Agworth is just home. It's just a place, and I think that's what we try to do with our the homecoming that we have. They've been doing it now for almost 60 years. A place where our children and all have moved away from here, that feels good to come back, just to come back and visit, come back and a place that they can call home. Mm-hmm. And so I just think this will always be home to me. It'll just always be home.
So. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.